Welcome back to another episode of the Aquademia podcast. I'm your host, Justin Grant.
And I'm Maddie Cassidy.
And today we sat down with GSA brand strategist and registered dietitian, Sherry Clark. We sat down with her to discuss our online survey that really was focusing on consumer questions surrounding all things seafood. But before we get into this wonderful, great conversation, we want to remind all of you that we are on social media. We are on Twitter. Our handle is at AquademiaPod. If you want to contact the podcast for any reason, you can fill out our online form located at globalseafood.org/podcast.
And if you enjoy this episode and you want to show your support, we would really appreciate it if you leave us a rating or review on whichever podcast platform you listen to us on. And while you're at it, you might as well subscribe so that every episode gets directly downloaded to your device when it comes out. All right, I think that's it for this intro, so let's get into this amazing conversation with our good friend, Sherry Clark. We'll talk to you at the end.
Welcome to the Aquademia podcast.
Our diet is hurting the environment in myriad ways. I mean, we desperately need to eat more seafood.
This is a pioneering industry with a whole lot of people who have really good ideas and a lot of experience and are unafraid.
Aquademia is your go-to podcast for a fresh take on all things seafood.
Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today. Sherry, you were on one of the first ever episodes, like 5 years ago. So I'm really glad that we're finally having you back on.
It's great to be here. National Nutrition Month.
Yes.
So we are going to be spending the majority of this episode talking about a survey that we had live for our listeners to fill out what consumers think about purchasing seafood. What are their fears? We just went through a variety of stuff, and I think a lot of you saw this survey. We posted it in many different avenues, and we had a ton of responses. So we're going to be able to really dissect some really valuable and accurate data. But before we get into that survey, Sherry, can you tell us a little bit about your background, specifically in the dietetics realm?
Oh, absolutely. So I started my career after undergraduate. I have a degree in clinical dietetics, and then I did an internship at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. And I did the first 10 years of my career in a clinic doing nutrition support for critically ill patients and also weight management in a multidisciplinary clinic, trying to help with the overall, you know, weight management strategy. That was back in the days of Fen-Phen. And so then I transitioned my career into the food industry, working for a division of Hormel that markets and sells products for patients in inpatient facilities for weight management or weight gain, actually. And then I worked for McCain Foods on their onion ring business, and I helped with the communication.
I'll do a whole episode on that.
That was interesting. I learned a lot, ate a lot of cheese sticks and onion rings, but also that was in the time of trans fats. So I did a lot of education on trans fats and tried to clear up misconceptions, because working for a company that has primarily fried food, we did a Better For You campaign talking about how all foods fit and activity, balance, and control are keys with anything. So even things like French fries, onion rings, and cheese sticks can fit into a healthy diet. So that was exciting. So I've always been able to keep a little nutrition. Then I transitioned to Highliner Foods, where I supported the club store businesses and helped with new product launches. Got to try a lot of new flavor profiles. It really helped me understand the culinary side of seafood and gave me tips on cooking it. So seeing the R&D side of seafood really opened my eyes to the different ways you can cook it. We had chefs on staff at all of, you know, at McCain, Highliner, and Hormel. But at Highliner, learning how they prepare seafood, adding different flavor profiles, doing research on flavor profiles to see what works best with different species, doing consumer research to see what people liked, what they would buy, learning about the seasonality of different species of seafood and flavor profiles that work with those particular things. Club stores do a lot of, we like limited time offers, or we'd call them rotations based on the time of the year. And so thinking about flavor profiles that are appealing, or the type of seafood that would work well for, say, holiday, maybe an appetizer versus right. an entree. It made me excited about just trying to promote seafood, you know, all throughout the year and throughout the day, even trying to encourage more consumption. And that led me to GSA. I started here in 2017, and I really got to learn about responsible sourcing. And mm-hmm. to me, protecting this valuable protein for future generations, and I'm a mom of four, so I want my kids to be able to enjoy this protein and others all around the world, because it is so important, and to educate on the benefits of farm-raised seafood. I think there's a lot of misunderstandings and hesitation surrounding it, so clearing up misconceptions and also learning what goes on behind the scenes has helped me communicate in my social circles, also in my marketing role, but even more importantly, just encouraging the consumption of seafood twice a week for all of the health benefits.
Right.
So here at GSA, I've had the opportunity to write content for our website, help with recipe development and food photography to showcase the eye-appealing and delicious opportunities we have with seafood, to try to help it be less scary.
Right.
It's definitely, you know, we even conducted research here at GSA. Seafood is not consumed as frequently as other proteins, especially poultry. And how can we change that? You know, I think by finding new ways to prepare it, trying to find out ways to make it more cost effective so it's not as much of a risk in your meal planning. That's been a great opportunity and a positive challenge for me to try to make people excited. And I have that same challenge in my family. I love seafood, and the rest of my family is not as excited about it. So for me, trying new recipes and getting the kids in the kitchen and trying to get them involved in the food preparation, which makes it more appealing as well. So that's kind of a long story with what brought me here, but I'm very passionate about nutrition. I'm a passionate mm-hmm. about seafood. I'm passionate about responsible sourcing. And it's a perfect fit. So I'm happy to be here today, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, thanks for being here.
So as Cherry mentioned, March is Nutrition Month. So if you're listening to this episode soon after it comes out, it's still Nutrition Month. And we wanted to do a special spotlight on the nutritional side of seafood, and also just do some reflection on what consumers think about purchasing seafood. Like, what are their fears behind it? What do they think about when they're buying seafood in the store? What goes through their mind? And then what do they do once they get home with that seafood? So a few months ago, we launched a survey all about this exact topic. So we're excited to go through the results with you today, Sherry, because Sherry is going to have like a special lens that she can view all of this information through. And then at the end of the survey, we opened up a question box for anyone to submit their questions for our registered dietitian. So we have a bunch of questions from the audience that Sherry is going to be able to answer. So let's get into it.
Sounds great.
Okay, so the first question on the survey, which is a pretty essential, basic question when thinking about purchasing seafood at the grocery store, and that is, do you prefer fresh or frozen seafood when grocery shopping? And I was actually pretty surprised by the results here. So the majority of people, just by a hair, 46% said, I enjoy both fresh and frozen seafood. 42% of people said, I enjoy fresh seafood. And only 12% of people said only frozen seafood.
All right. So Sherry, before you answer, Maddie, do you have a preference?
I by far prefer frozen.
Okay.
Just because I like to go grocery shopping like infrequently, like maybe mm-hmm. once every 2 weeks.
Yep.
So I prefer getting frozen because I don't know when I'm going to cook it.
Yep. So same with me, because I also have two children at home. And now that they're old enough to be playing sports, that we can create a whole 5 week, a school week menu or dinner plans. And I would say 20% of the time we actually get to follow it because things get really crazy. So I can't buy something that – that's not frozen that we are almost forced to have to cook at an odd time because we got home really late. So frozen seafood, I mean, I do buy fresh if it's like the weekend and I know like, hey, I'm going to be able to bring this home. We're cooking it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But so Sherry, based off those results, is there a reason why, say, there's a majority of people that said that they don't actually buy frozen, why they should consider it? Is frozen seafood something that we should be scared of? Is it not as nutritious? Like, is there any misconceptions there?
Definitely. Frozen seafood should be considered. It actually could be fresher than fresh, depending on where you get it, because mm-hmm. the way that it's processed, sometimes it's frozen at peak freshness, and so the nutrients are preserved. And then, as you mentioned, it gives you the flexibility in your meal planning, so you can cook it whenever you want. And the other benefit is you can also find value added or flavor profiles already added.
Right.
So it really makes meal preparation simple. It almost takes longer to preheat the oven than it does to put it in the oven and cook it.
Yep.
So it does allow more flexibility. I think, and also given, you know, the seasonality, you can see different flavor profiles. Retailers, sometimes they'll have their core items, but then they oftentimes bring in new items. So sometimes it's fun to keep that core item. Maybe it's, you know, a battered fish that you can bake in the oven that you know your whole family enjoys. But then maybe there's a new, you know, something with a glaze on it for a summer, or a grilling option that you can try and at least see if that might work and see if it's appealing to your family or to you. But it does give you the flexibility. You can pull out one piece. You can pull out four pieces. And you can prepare what you want at that moment. So I like to see that the survey did result in people enjoying both, because
right.
there is a time for both. I treat myself to seafood when I can. It's not the fresh seafood store is about 10 minutes from my house, but I have to plan it on days, as you mentioned, that I know I'm picking up my children and I can prepare it that night,
because
that is the best. But it's super quick and easy. You know, you can, once again, preheat the oven, or you could throw it on the grill in some aluminum foil if you don't want a big mess.
Mm-hmm.
You could cook it in the skillet. I've gotten more creative with that. I was always nervous about the smell
mm-hmm.
when I cook fish in my house, and my family used to complain about that. But I feel like I've figured out ways, you know, not to have it splatter or to bake it in the oven. And I learned some tips when I was working at Highliner. Even if you have you know, an item that you don't want to dry out, you can even stick a little bit of water, or if it's a glaze, in the bottom of the baking dish. Sometimes that helps keep the moisture in.
Yep.
And then if you don't want to mess and you're in a really big hurry, you can stick a piece of aluminum foil down before you bake it. And that makes cleanup so much easier. So, and also the smell, then everything's gone and you don't have that smell. But a lot of times it's when it's cooked at too high of a temperature, but oftentimes dries it out, which you don't want. So cooking it slower, I haven't had an issue. So I think with practice, as with anything, with practice and time, you learn what you like, you learn the favorites. And sometimes if you put like a more basic flavor profile on a seafood, then it's something that people recognize and we're willing to try, because oftentimes you can use the same recipes that you do for chicken, for like a white fish.
Right.
So it's not as intimidating as I initially thought, too, when I was entering the seafood world. So I was happy to see the results of the survey.
And so I just want to reiterate something that you mentioned about frozen seafood, which is when it is frozen, if it is fresh upon that time, it locks in all of that nutritional value. It is not lost. And
correct.
I think that could be a misconception where, you know, this is frozen, so it may be lacking in some of that those nutritional areas that people care about, but that is not true. And that is for everything that's frozen. Frozen vegetables and everything, all is, depending on the time, if they freeze it once it's harvested, then it maintains all of that high quality nutritional value.
Absolutely true. And it also tends to be a better price point for
right.
anything,
yep.
you know? So I think the nutritional value, the freshness, and the cost are three very good reasons to make frozen seafood or frozen food in general part of your regular menu.
Well, speaking of cost, that almost is a good segue into question number two, which is cost a factor when purchasing seafood? So this was, let's see how we did this question. So this was a rating system. It was 0 through 4. 0 meaning cost is not a factor in my decision making when buying seafood, and 4 is cost is really important and I will make sure to buy something that's maybe more in my budget. So those results were cost does not matter, I'll buy whatever I like, price doesn't matter, was just under 8%. 1, next step up, where costs I kind of consider, 15%. 2, which is in the middle of the road, was about 40%. 3, 23%. And 4, cost is really important and I pay attention to it, was 15%. I'm not really shocked by those results. And we had a ton of responses. And I do think, and Sherry, this is for you to answer, but I just, when I look at that, that's kind of aligned with what I do, right? Like, I know that there are certain things, certain seafoods that I really enjoy, and I know that they're going to be a little bit higher price. Like scallops, for example, is something that I really enjoy, and those aren't the cheapest things that you can buy, but they're very
willing
tasty,
to pay more.
But I'm willing to pay more, yeah.
Especially for a special occasion.
Right.
I think that's, you know, sometimes maybe once a week we try to, you know, treat ourselves to a dinner that we really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And when you have time to sit down as a family or, you know, with a friend and really enjoy it, not be in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you spend those nights on, spend a little bit more on those nights when you're preparing food. But if you want something, like, I do think most people do care. And I think there's two things you consider. Also brings you back to frozen. Frozen mm-hmm. is a very cost-effective, you know, some of the whitefish tend to be a little cheaper in price. So if you go to the fresh counter, you can see, and you can basically look up a recipe on different recipe platforms,
right.
Or we even have some recipes on our BAP website. The nutrition Seafood Nutrition Partnership has excellent recipes that have been tested and developed by chefs. And mm-hmm. So I feel like they're a little lower risk when you know that. And you can also, one thing I do is when I look at recipes, look at the ratings to see, you know, 5 stars versus 4 stars, and look at the reviews and see if there's any recommended changes to the recipe. But in terms of cost, if you purchase frozen, the other thing is consider the whole meal versus just that protein in your cost. So, for instance, you could serve it with, you know, a rice or a potato, which tends to be lower budget. Realizing that a serving size is 4 ounces. A serving size is not the whole plate. It's not half the plate. It's a portion of the plate. And one thing that we have in North America is a bit of portion distortion. We're used to seeing very large pieces of fish or seafood on our plate when we go out to dinner, mm-hmm. which could be you're serving for more than you're serving your recommended
week.
Allowance
yeah,
for the week,
right?
Which is great. It's a good value when you're going to a restaurant. But keep in mind, when you eat at home, it's 4 ounces is not a lot. It's like the size of a deck of cards, the size of the palm of your hand. And you can balance that out with some vegetables and a starch, maybe a dinner roll, to bring the cost of the overall meal down. And then also look at the protein sources that you have on your menu over the course of a week. So balancing it out over a course of a week and over the meal to make it work.
That's great. Okay, next question, which is huge here at GSA. Do you look for responsibly sourced seafood when shopping? And I think that we tend to have an audience that cares about responsible sourcing.
Right.
So our results might be, probably are, a little skewed for this question compared to like the larger public. But our results were 94% of people say, yes, responsibly sourced seafood is important to me. And 6% of people said, I don't consider this.
That's interesting. And I do agree that we have a very, an audience that cares, which is fantastic. And I think educated as well. The fact that you're listening to the podcast means that you're interested in seafood and learning more about it. So, but audience beyond this audience, I think we can share the good news about seafood with our friends and family and coworkers and spread the news, because seafood is an underconsumed protein. People are missing out on the nutritional benefits of seafood, even serving it at a party. If you host something, I know it is a little more costly, but you can again balance it out with other appetizers. So sharing that good news. But I also think that the general public might not realize what responsibly sourced means.
Mm-hmm.
So I more often than not, when there's a conversation about seafood, it's going to come up. It comes up that they prefer, you know, only wild or something like that. And it's an opportunity to explain the importance of both farmed and wild in maintaining a healthy seafood supply chain. And also talking about, you know, what responsible sourcing is, you know, how it is not just the type of fish, a farmed or wild, and isn't good and one isn't bad. And also talking about responsible sourcing. And sometimes people use the term sustainability. We don't use that word because we talk about, you know, something that's it's a process and it's something that we do over time. So food safety, taking care of the workers and taking care of the environment where the seafood is produced. So a lot goes into that. And GSA, I mean, it's exciting to work here because it's through the education and the advocacy supporting the farmers and the producers. You really learn about what goes on behind the scenes. And I do the research we did a couple of years ago, and I'm sure it's at least as relevant now as it was then, is that consumers care about where their food comes from, and not just location, but how it's produced. They want to know the story. They want to know the people. When you have an emotional connection with, you know, where your seafood or any food comes from, it just makes you feel stronger about your purchase. It makes you feel better about your purchase. And there's more and more education about food production, I think, in the media now. So it's our job to help clear up misconceptions and encourage the healthy protein, and twice a week consumption is what's recommended to benefit from the nutrition, the vitamins, minerals, protein, omega-3 fatty acids that you can get in seafood.
And I think that retailers, restaurants, right, because they are now educated with that, they're almost, I wouldn't say forced, but because the consumers have shifted into being really aware and asking these questions, that now as servers or seafood counter workers, whatever, they're fueled with that, with those educational pieces, so that when someone asks those questions, they can proudly say, oh yes, this is absolutely responsibly sourced. This is where we get it from. This is how it works. If you want some more information, this is where you can go. And to kind of be proud to not say, well, actually, I don't know the answer to that. It's, oh no, we do have the answer to that. And hopefully this answers your question. And so that's...
It's very true. And a lot of times, if there's a particular retailer that you shop at, they oftentimes have a seafood sustainability policy or information on their website. So if you want to learn more, that's a good resource to find out what they're doing. And if you have questions, you could certainly ask. A lot of times there's a contact us availability, and you can find out. And sometimes by asking, it makes them think about things too. So we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to move on to question 4, which is, which barriers prevent you from trying new types of seafood at home? Another question that got a ton of responses. So what barriers prevent you from trying new types of seafood at home? 24% said the fear of ruining the recipe. 26% said taste. And 50% said the price of seafood. I think we talked a little bit about price and some alternatives that hopefully can help that 50% of voters figure out maybe a more creative, cheaper way to still get that seafood at home. But for me personally, before I hand it over to you, Sherry, taste, if it's a new seafood, I usually would probably try it at a restaurant first, or at Seafood Expo in Boston, which we just came back from, because there's a lot of new seafoods that are being cooked by professional chefs now at booths. So you get to try new things, and sometimes then you can take that home and cook it without that fear of not knowing what the taste is going to be. But fear of ruining the recipe, for me, that can be a big, if it's not as simple as, you know, put this seasoning on it or coat this glaze on it and stick it in the oven. You know, if the recipe is a little bit more complicated, I am definitely not the best cook in our household. My wife is also a registered dietitian, and she loves to cook, so she doesn't have the same fears that I do, and she's constantly like telling me, Justin, you're doing this wrong. So I'm like, okay, well, show me how it's done appropriately. But what's your take on these results? Sherry?
I think they're very true and they're reasonable concerns for sure. And I think, you know, at Highlander, we used to call these fish shoes because...
Oh, that's good.
I wish I had heard that before.
Yes.
I have not heard that.
The fear of ruining a recipe or the smell or the taste or the cost. It's just a little more risky because it's not something that we're as comfortable purchasing. And we did have the conversation about frozen and the value added, which means flavor profiles are already added. That is an easy way. Trying in a restaurant, as you mentioned. And even at a restaurant, sometimes like this might be a big treat for you. And do you want to choose an item that you might not like and spend $30? You know, that's a risk. So one thing that I sometimes do with my husband is we get two different things and we share.
Yep.
And he's not as much of a seafood lover as I am, but he's trying to be healthy and he knows that it's a good choice. So that's one way that I get him to try things. And then we both get to experience something different. It's lower risk. So if one of us likes one of the other entrees better, then we trade. But it makes it fun.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
Actually.
We're both foodies, so... But I'm definitely the seafood lover.
Yeah.
So that's one way. I do believe that there's so many more recipes available. And you can read the reviews before you go and buy the ingredients and prepare them. And I find it really helpful. And if it's something that I'm nervous about, I usually look for a recipe that has like 5 stars. I tend to use Pinterest, but there's so many options out there. And you can search the type of seafood you're in the mood for. My family didn't used to be as excited about salmon, and 2 of my 4 kids will eat it. My husband's okay with it, but now I've found some recipes that we all enjoy. So sometimes it does take time, and again, that is a risk for cost, but you could buy, even if it's a 1/2 pound, and start by feeding half the family this recipe, and even if it's something, and then you feed the other half of the family, you know, I don't know, I always have some frozen chicken nuggets in my freezer that you can bake. And let them try a bite. I truly believe that children learn from example, and by watching you eat something and enjoy it, they tend to want to try it. And it might not work every time, but the more they see it, they get curious. So sitting down at the table, eating as a family or eating in a group, it's a positive social experience, and you're also setting an example. So that's for the younger seafood eaters. But for those of us that are making those decisions and are fear of the price and the taste and the a fear of ruining the recipe, starting out with a small, like, don't make a huge batch of something. And a lot of times seafood isn't as good left over, microwaved in the microwave. So just purchase what you need and add some sides. So that will keep your costs down and keep the risk lower. And if you have a big salad, you can fill up on that. You can add some nuts to it to get, you know, if you don't have enough of the seafood and say, oh, that was really good, I'm going to buy more next time. I might buy a pound. Also realizing that, you know, when you cook seafood, one thing that I pay attention to is the thickness. You know, when you purchase, if it's got a very thick center and, you know, thinner on the edges, sometimes I fold them under. That's just something I've found to work, so it cooks more evenly and it's not dry on the edges and raw in the middle. And it should flake with a knife or a fork. You know, it should, you'll be able to tell when it's done. And sometimes the recipe that you read isn't exact because when you purchase fresh seafood, every piece is different. The thickness is different.
Right.
So it's a bit of trial and error. But I think realizing that that's the case and just taking your time and you have to check it. Don't prepare a new recipe on a time when you're time crunched. You know, do that on the night or the day that you have time to enjoy and really take your time, and then it tends to be a little bit lower risk.
I think for any of our listeners who have young children that are hesitant to try seafood, something that just kind of clicked in my mind as you were talking, Sherry, was that consistency of exposure. It's if you try to throw a plate of seafood in front of your child and say, this is what's for dinner, this is your only option, then the hesitation gets even more stronger, and then that fear sets in, and then they almost have this, they shut down, and it's really hard to get them to try it. So I've noticed I eat sushi a lot, and my daughter has started saying, Daddy, I really like watching you eat sushi. And so she just stares at me, which is kind of weird. But I eat sushi with chopsticks. So she watches how I'll put a little bit of ginger on each section. And just the other day, she's like, I want to try a bite. And I was like, oh, okay, definitely. And then my son also wanted to try a bite. And they have now gone from that to trying shrimp. When my daughter was really young, she used to eat mussels with me a lot. She was so young that she didn't really have that fear of, oh, this is whatever, like a texture thing maybe. And so I have a ton of videos of her and I just opening them up and her eating them. And then something happened where she just was like, nope, not doing this anymore. But because I constantly eat seafood at home and they just see that as a normal thing, and I'm saying, this is what daddy's having tonight. You guys are having this, but if you want to try a bite, let me know. And I've been doing that now for months in front of them. And now I'm starting to see the curiosity setting in, and it almost empowers them to say, I'm now making the decision to say, I'm ready to try this. And I'm hoping that continues, and who knows where we'll be a year from now. Hopefully that will be what I'm eating, they'll be eating, instead of kind of doing things a little bit separately. But
that's
worked.
That's a fantastic approach. And I've got four of different ages, and my older two will eat those type of things as well. You know, they've seen me. I love sushi. I love seafood. And our my son, who's 14, he's been eating oysters for a couple of years, but he just went out with my husband.
He's an expensive date.
Expensive. That is very true. I was thinking that when you were mentioning the sushi, your bills go up exponentially when they start to enjoy these things. But it is really special to do that together. And,
right.
And there are ways, you know, they can do some sushi choices that aren't quite as expensive.
That's but true, right.
It is fun. And mussels you can make at home, and they're not hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and there's so many different, you know, then they dip it in the bread, and it's just it's a fun experience. And it can be a special occasion food that's not as expensive as some other seafood. So, and then they can learn about the seafood too. So I think it does make it fun, but forcing... I don't force my kids to try anything, but I'm like, you should try. You might like it. And then if they say yes, they do. If not, they might try next time. And just because they say no once, you don't want to give up.
That is right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we try the two-bite club, depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's got to be in the two-bite club, and they end up being like the two-nibble club. But you know what?
It's the smallest bite.
Yeah, right.
It's better than nothing. They're keeping an open mind as best they can at their age, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's key. You cannot give up after one failed attempt. Sometimes it can take 15 times. I mean, I think there's even a statistic out there of like introducing new foods, how many times it really takes before someone actually determines that it's not for them.
Right.
Might be 15 or something like that. I don't know. My wife told me.
And with
don't
kids.
Quote her, though.
No, but flavor profiles change over time and just your acceptance. So... even as adults, you might not like the same thing all the time. So I
very recently started loving spicy food out of nowhere. I used to avoid it. And now I'm like, I cannot get enough spice on everything. I don't know what happened. But I'll take it. It's fun.
That sounds great. You can even make seafood spicy.
Yes.
A curry. Seafood curries are delicious.
Ooh, so
and you
good.
Can buy the pre-made marinades and you can add some vegetables. Super easy. So... it's
there
fun.
There's some really nice frozen shrimp that comes with some really spicy like dipping sauce.
Ooh.
That's for me, those are like the Super Bowl or anytime I'm watching sports, I'm like, I need to get my shrimp in there.
Shrimp.
Spicy chili dipping sauce.
Oh, that is delicious, yes. And that's the other thing with trying new things, using a dipping sauce or a glaze or a sauce.
Yes, that's a great point.
It tends to... especially if it's a flavor profile that you know you like, it's a nice way to ease into it.
All right, okay. Where are we at, Maddie?
All right, next question. Do you consider yourself an educated seafood buyer? And 70-ish percent of people said yes, 16% of people said no, and 12% of people said, I wish I was more educated. So, Sherry, for those people that said that they don't consider themselves educated or the people who say, I wish I was more educated, what sort of resources or recommendations do you have for those people that want to learn more?
Can I add two before we even get into that? What do we need to, what constitute an educated seafood buyer?
Ooh,
right?
Yeah.
So because we didn't really ask for elaborations for the specific question, as I was answering it, I was like, well, do I consider myself an educated seafood buyer? And I'm like, okay, well, I understand what responsibly sourced is and what to look for, and but there's more to it, I'm sure, than just that. So maybe we can talk about
what does it entail?
Right.
It's very subjective, you're right. And it depends on the person that's answering the question. But
yep.
I guess for me, being educated would mean like how much you cook. Do you cook it with the skin on, the skin off? Mm. How do you thaw it? That's an interesting one. Like value-added frozen seafood, you don't have to thaw. But there's always, when you buy a prepared seafood or even an IQF, which means individually quick frozen, you know, fillet at the grocery store, at a club store, they have thawing instructions right on the package. So they make it clear how to do it. But I guess I don't know what I would, I consider myself an educated seafood buyer because I work in the seafood industry and I've learned through time and as a dietitian. But I think it's knowing that it's good for you. I think people would say that that's something that they want to fit it into their diet because it's a healthy protein source. Mm-hmm. Knowing that it's protein, knowing that most people know that it has omega-3 fatty acids. I think that's a benefit of seafood. Where it's produced, I don't think would be as common. And I think some people think they're educated and they think wild is better than farmed. And that would maybe be a false perception. So I imagine that more people consider themselves educated that might have misinformation if it were to be maybe not this podcast, but people in the general public. So I think continued education by retailers through point of sale and store, having seafood counter personnel equipped to answer questions, even if it's how much do I need for four people? You know, those kind of questions that it's not as clear. You see these big fillets of fish and they're going to cut it for you if you're in a seafood market. A lot of times if you're in a retailer, they have them pre-cut and portioned. But using the resources. And then also online, I think reaching out to educated or to credible sources like GSA, Best Aquaculture Practices. We have a consumer page on our website that goes over nutritionals, where it comes from, what it means, the different steps in the production process, which might not be something that the average consumer would know, but knowing that there's a place where, you know, feed is made, and there's a lot of work that goes into creating a diet for the farm-raised seafood that mimics or is very similar to that in the wild. Ton of research. So that a hatchery is where, you know, eggs kind of like are formed, and great care is taken into making sure that they're preserved and maintained so that they develop into a healthy fish. And then also how it's processed and food safety. So I think we probably know more than the average person, but this type of information is available on our website. The Seafood Nutrition Partnership is a wealth of knowledge as well. They have resources that are by, you know, scientific experts. They have forums that they continue to gather information and report it. So they're an excellent resource. And your retailers' websites, they usually work with third parties or credible sources to make sure that the information that they're displaying on their website will be helpful to their consumers. So there are a lot of places you can go to become more educated and to clarify any questions that you might have.
All right, so we're going to move ahead to the next question, which was, are you more likely to try a new seafood dish if it is prepared for you at a restaurant? 81% said yes, leaving 19% that responded no. And I think I fall with the majority here on this one, which I know I already mentioned it earlier on in the episode, but I do, if I want to try something new or I've heard, so I have a lot of seafoodies that I'm friends with that would get different seafood at restaurants. And, you know, if you're comfortable like taking a bite off of someone's plate, not everyone is, but hey, that's I'm not.
So, I'm not either.
Know, especially
I love
if
it.
I'm a friend of the person. I wouldn't just say, hey, can I have a bite of that to a stranger? That's, you know, like it's a business dinner. I'm not going to do that. But, you know, my friends order something that I haven't tried. Then that's that opportunity to say, hey, can I try a bite of that? Because maybe I want to order that next time. But, yeah, at restaurants, I typically, if I see something and I look at what the ingredients are, what the glaze or however it's prepared, I'm like, ooh, that flavor profile looks like it's going to be tasty. So I'll give it a try.
No, I think that's very, it's unsurprising that that was the response because restaurants tend to make it taste so delicious. Sometimes, you know, it's higher in sodium and that's definitely a flavor enhancer. I feel like I tend to use less salt at home, but a lot of the sauces and marinades and preparation methods. And then they have oftentimes better quality cooking surfaces, you know, grills, high-end stoves. It definitely cooks it so well. Not to mean you can't do it at home, but it's a great place to try it and share or get a couple of different things for the table and get some sharing plates. I love to do that. But I do think, you know, choosing a – it also depends on where you go. I think I wouldn't order seafood at every restaurant, I think. But if you know it's – they're known for – seafood, right. You know, maybe
if they have seafood in the name, then
you definitely want to give it a shot. Yes. But if it's just like the only item on their menu and you don't really know if that's their specialty, I might not be as inclined to get that item. But more often than not, I do, because it's my opportunity to get my one serving per week from a restaurant and the other one from home. Because even though I know I'm supposed to get two servings per week, I still have to make an effort. It doesn't just happen. But on those weeks, even if it's a tuna fish sandwich for one of my two, it's a way to get it, you know.
Well, so. I mean, there's recommendations for how many servings of fruits and vegetables. And I think we struggle too sometimes with that. So it's, you know, it's just kind of this ongoing battle that sometimes you really have to plan it out. And it doesn't always go to plan. But I do think being conscious of it and trying your best to meet with the recommended weekly servings are for whatever it is that you really try to get there.
Well, building off of that, the other thing I love about seafood, and it's kind of going off track with this particular question, but I think we're so used to saying, oh, I can't have this, I can't have that, that's not good for me. The approach that I love to take as a dietitian is, what's missing in my diet? Am I getting all my seafood? Am I getting the fruits and vegetables I need? Am I getting the fiber that I need? Am I getting the calcium? And if you take that what's missing versus what I need to take away, you're going to nourish your body versus just feeding it. And it's a much more positive approach to an overall like wellness mindset. So I think I love working for seafood because you're never saying you can't have that.
Yeah.
It's always like you need to get more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
That's a perfect segue into the final question, which is, do you eat the recommended amount of seafood every week, which is 2 4-ounce servings? And shockingly, our seafood audience, only 40% of people said yes and 60% of people said no. So it's absolutely what you were just saying, Justin, and you, Shari. You really kind of have to plan in order to get those 2 servings in, because not many people have seafood for breakfast, so that eliminates a third of your meals right there.
Did we put what the recommendation was in
yes.
this question? Okay, I thought we did. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't misleading our audience if they said, well, I don't really know what that is, so I'm just going to put no, because it's not like a whole plate of a giant filet. But you could, but then there's your 2 weeks' worth.
But you're right. Most people aren't eating smoked salmon for breakfast, although you could, and maybe that's your special occasion breakfast on the weekends.
Oh, I wish I could eat that every
Wouldn't
breakfast.
That be fantastic? Like, a lot of times my breakfast is the crust from the peanut butter and jellies that I'm making for my children that day. But making an effort, even at lunch, if you're packing your lunch, you tend not to pack seafood because you can't heat it up or it doesn't heat up as well. So the meal that we oftentimes think about is dinner. Now,
that's
I think the ways to add it to lunch or even breakfast would be through, you know, tuna, which counts. You know, it's still
sure
having a tuna sandwich or the packets that you can get that are shelf stable and you can add to your salad at work and then shake some dressing on it. Definitely lower cost and great source of protein. I've done that, and I love adding berries, like berries and more of a fruity dressing with maybe a little goat cheese to mm-hmm. taste delicious. So there's ways to make it exciting and healthy and very filling, because protein tends to keep you fuller longer. Mm-hmm. And it's nutrient dense, the vitamins, minerals, the protein. And most seafood is low fat unless you cook it in a lot of oil, or if it does have fat, it's a healthy fat, which is beneficial for many things, including heart, mental health. And so, yes, we need to try to work on that. And I consider myself in that I need to work on it too. But
well,
I
that's
think
a
it's
really
a good goal.
That's a good point, though. I mean, I think even when we're having this overall discussion, when we default to eating seafood, I generally am considering this as a dinner thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and there's only
sushi,
seven dinners in a week.
I know, that's a really good point. And I do, I mean, sushi, I usually try to have, it's usually a weekend because I'm out and about and I'll be either at a restaurant, but I'm not doing that during the week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm not doing that during the week. It's if I'm going to have seafood for breakfast or for lunch, that's something that I need to have planned and have actually considered and knew that I was going to bring that with me to work. And I think that's a little bit, it's not as challenging, but you really got to think about it.
You do. The one thing I do with salmon, I will eat it leftover the next day. So sometimes I do purchase extra when I make it, and I don't prefer it warmed up, but I do like it cold on top of a salad. So that's another way that I can do it for lunch is putting it on top of a salad as it's left over. Then I'm also not wasting it, so it helps with the cost, decrease waste, adds another flavor to my and it definitely fills you up, and you don't have that lull in your day when you eat a big lunch that's too heavy and, you know, carbs are lacking protein.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to have energy and feel like you have a clear mind to get through the rest of the day at work. So that's something you can consider.
I like your idea of bringing a salad, because I buy those tuna packets mm-hmm. usually at the local market basket. There's mm-hmm. always like 5 for $5.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that you could buy 3 and they're only $3 too. Because so, I was like, well, it says 5 for $5, so I got to buy 5. What happens if I buy 10? Is that deal not still going to be there? But I buy those a lot, and I can just keep them in my...
In your desk.
I never thought I would be that person that has, like, a food drawer, and I definitely have a food drawer.
Oh, but me too. I have to.
So I got all sorts of things in there.
But yes.
Doing it with a salad.
Or crackers in some raw
crackers.
Vegetables. If you're in a pinch, and I know my mornings are crazy, and usually my lunch is the last one made, so having, like, those things on hand or pre-cut vegetables that you make earlier in the week
mm-hmm.
that you just grab and go, and you can throw it in your lunchbox.
Yep.
But then you're also eating healthier and getting that variety and including those nutrients that, the tuna packets or any type of shelf-stable seafood or another option. It's not just fresh or frozen, so keep that in mind too.
And goat cheese, by the way, is something that my wife has been buying a lot more of, and I don't know which brand, and not that we're supposed to spend an episode talking about cheese, but goat cheese on a salad
delicious.
With tuna.
Oh,
and you can
so
throw
good.
Like you said, I even do like craisins or something like that.
Blueberries, it's
yep.
delicious.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, I love goat cheese.
And the crumbled
it's
goat cheese with seafood is delicious. And I get the inspiration again when you talk about getting seafood in restaurants. If you choose a salad and you put, say, salmon or something on top,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, this is so good. And I try to recreate it at home. So mm-hmm. that's another way to decrease the risk. Try it in a restaurant and then attempt to make it at home or look up a recipe. So those are some things I use too as my strategies for making it work.
All right. So we are now at the section of the survey where we had questions that were asked from our audience. And I do want to mention too, before we get into these questions, that if you're listening to this episode and you didn't have a chance to fill out this survey and you do have questions, we will be having links in the show notes that you can reach out to the podcast. You can ask those questions. You know, if it's something that we can't answer on the show, we will email you back and give you direction on hopefully answering that question that you have. So don't feel that you missed out. And we also are going to try to do this type of episode 3 more times before the end of the year. and again, this is 2024 in case we're so we can timestamp this episode. So if you missed out on this survey, we will be doing another one in another few months. So make sure to stay tuned, and we'll make sure to mention when that survey goes out in a future episode. So question number one, Sherry, is wild and farmed seafood nutritionally similar?
Yes, that's a question we get a lot, and it's a valid question. And the answer is yes. And I mentioned it a bit before, but the reason behind it is a lot of work goes into the feed for farm-raised seafood to try to mimic that of the diet of the fish in the wild. So, I mean, if you were to do a nutrition analysis on every piece of food, it's all going to be slightly different. And that's just the nature of a product. It would be chicken or eggs or anything as well. But researchers study the behaviors of different species, and they see how they eat, the types of foods they eat. Are they carnivores? Are they omnivores? Are they eating plants? Are they eating meat? Are they eating fish? And then they're able to create diets using, sometimes it's byproducts from seafood that's produced that can't be sold, and they're able to use that into fish, or fish feed rather. And also, there are producers that just develop feed, and it's based on this research. So as a consumer, I would be confident in eating farmed and wild. And it's even more important to realize that by doing that, you're promoting the longevity of this species, or the health of this of the protein source, rather, not species. Because if we were to all eat wild, we would deplete the resources. So it's important that when available, we eat a mix of both, and we vary our species so that we're not depleting any one species or resource for future generations. So yes, that's a long-winded answer for it is, and you can feel confident when you purchase farmed and wild, especially when it's responsibly sourced, because standards are in place to make sure that the feed meets the needs of that particular species.
So like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we received a ton of questions. However, looking at the list, I think we've actually answered a lot of them throughout going through the other survey questions. So thank you for being so proactive, Sherry. But one question that stands out to me that we haven't touched on yet is the relationship between seafood and pregnancy. I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about not eating seafood at all during pregnancy. So could you touch on that a little bit?
Yes. This is another one that definitely comes up a lot. And seafood should be consumed during pregnancy. There's been talk about requiring low mercury seafood to be consumed during pregnancy, but most seafood that we have on the market is not high mercury. The top species of tilapia, salmon, and shrimp are not high in mercury. So most of the things that you see in your grocery store are fine for pregnancy. And in fact, there's some more recent studies that have been done to basically say that the risk of not getting enough seafood is worse for the health of the mom and the baby than eating too much or having the wrong types. So again, we're not talking about eating seafood every single day. The recommendations are getting 2 servings per week, and it's 4-ounce servings. You have the protein, and then the vitamins and minerals in the seafood are thought to counteract if there were anything negative in the seafood. You know, the selenium can bind to mercury. There's the omega-3 fatty acids that can help with the brain health and the development of the unborn baby, and also of the mom, also help with the mental health of the mom. So continue to eat seafood through pregnancy, and it's very important. I did it, and thankfully I have 4 healthy children.
So we just got back yesterday from the Boston Seafood Show, CENA, which is Seafood Expo North America, for those of you that need to understand the acronyms, which the seafood industry is full of. And there were several, more than I can ever remember, pregnant attendees that were just eating their way through the show, and they were not scared to do so. And actually, many of them knew exactly what they were doing and just said they knew what the benefits were. I know, Sherry, you just talked about them. I don't know if... I guess why I'm mentioning this is some people just have that general feel, that fear. And if they say, well, if there's a possibility that eating too much seafood is going to harm my baby, then they just, I think they just axe it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to
overcome those hurdles. But I will say you want to avoid undercooked and raw seafood during pregnancy, because there can be some toxins that you just don't want to take any chances in that respect. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, you practice good food safety, as with anything else, food safety, make sure, you know, you get from a reputable source and you cook it to the proper internal temperature. Twice a week is definitely worth having.
And to clarify, there was a few people that stopped by our booth, and when I say they were eating their way through the show, they were having dishes that were prepared right in front of them by these chefs at these booths. So I'm not saying they were going around and just eating
the
something
raw
cold
fish.
that was sitting on someone's booth for who knows how long. I think, yes, there is some, I don't want to say common sense, because it's not always common sense, right? Like what's safe and what's not. But I think they were at the show, actually knew who two of the four people were, and they have been in the seafood industry for a very long time, so they knew they knew what they were doing.
Yes. So again, this is the educated audience that we're speaking to. But if you have friends or family that say, oh, I can't have seafood, definitely encourage them. Say the benefits are stronger than the risks. So twice a week, as is the same for all of us. So
all right. Well, I think that about wraps everything up. Sherry, thank you so much for coming back on the show. This has been such a fantastic episode. And I feel like even though I have these ideas rattling around my head from years of working in the seafood industry, it's nice to have all of these conversations in one place that, like, we can refer back to with the facts and your opinions about things. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you for having me, and please feel free to reach out with any questions. I'm happy to help.
Yeah, and we'll make sure, like we always do, that any relevant links or contact information that we will always put in our show notes. I think, to your point, Maddie, I mean, the three of us have sat down and we've kind of prepped for this episode. We looked at the results. We determined how we wanted to navigate this conversation. And even though we did that for a few days, there are still new things that I learned from these conversations. That idea of buying two different seafood plates and then sharing it is such a great idea. I mean, we do that with non-seafood dishes too, if we wanted to try something different. But those are, you know, there was takeaways from this episode that I personally are going to be like bringing back home and just be like, oh, you know, I heard this and I think this is a really good idea. I want to try it. So hopefully our audience also got similar takeaways from this episode as well. I mean, again, it was a great conversation. We recorded much longer than I thought we were going to, but that is okay, because we all like to talk. This is a podcast. That's what it's for. And again, if any of our listeners submitted a question and then we didn't touch on it, please reach out to us. All of our contact information is in the show notes, and we'll make sure to reach back out to you and answer that question. If I can't answer it, Maddie can't answer it, we'll send it over to Sherry. She'll probably be able to answer it. If Sherry can't, we will point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry.
Folks, that was our conversation with Sherry Clark. I hope you learned something. I know I did.
I definitely did.
I want to remind you that we are on social media. We are on Twitter at AquademiaPod. If you want to contact the podcast for any reason, we do have an online form located at globalseafood.org/podcast.
And you can leave us a rating or review on whichever podcast platform you listen to us on. That really helps us get the word out about the show. And make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast so that you can automatically get every episode downloaded to your device.
We will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Ciao.